Thank you. While this is loading, let me thank all of you for being here on the last day of the conference, so early in the morning. Your support is really remarkable, and I applaud you for it. I want to change, or I should say, narrow the scope of the presentation from what Dr. Moon gave us, which was a wonderful international presentation, and thank you for that. We need more of it. I'd just like to bring us a little closer to home here and talk about a study that I've been doing with LGB youth, mostly in New York City. And that's what I want to focus on, specifically with respect to their cigarette use, and whether tobacco use serves a coping purpose for the youngsters and the implications of tobacco for their psychological distress. We're required nowadays to tell you about our relationships by APHA. Well, I do have a lot of relationships, but not the kind that might upset APHA. I must say that if it weren't for the relationships that I have, this study would not be possible. And in fact, I would just like to thank my collaborators before I move on. Thank the funding agency who supported this effort, the recruitment sites from which the youngsters were recruited, and most importantly of all, the youngsters themselves who gave so freely of their time. Some context here. Cigarette use has been found to be much more prevalent among LGB youth than heterosexual peers. In fact, one recent review found that the smoking prevalence ranged between a third to two-thirds among the LGB youth as compared to a quarter to a third among heterosexual peers. A much more recent meta-analysis just published found that LGB youth were three times more likely to smoke, and particularly to be recent smokers, than their heterosexual peers. Now, although we know about the prevalence of tobacco use among LGB youth, what we are less clear about are the reasons for their cigarette use. As we turn to the larger literature for some insights about this, what we find is that among the primary factors for higher prevalence of smoking are stress and distress. During times of stress, individuals are most likely to smoke cigarettes or smoke cigarettes more frequently. Those who are anxious or depressed, and I'm sorry for the typo here, are more likely to be current smokers than those who are less distressed. And indeed, we learned from smokers themselves that they use cigarettes in an effort to cope with stress and distress. However, the role of stress and distress on smoking among LGB individuals has been less examined. Although smoking is widely accepted as a strategy used by smokers to alleviate stress and distress, less clear is whether smoking is, in fact, an effective coping strategy for reducing stress and distress. If smoking is effective, it should buffer or moderate the association between stress and subsequent distress. In other words, as stress is increasing, smoking should bring down the distress, so keeping in check and actually reducing the distress that is experienced. In addition, and this is a corollary hypothesis, if smoking is an effective coping strategy, then smokers should have less need or receive less benefit from other protective sources, such as social support. The current study examines one potential reason for smoking among LGB youth over time, that it serves as a coping strategy to buffer the negative impact of stress on psychological distress. We examine coping as it relates to multiple potential stressors, including stressful life events and social stress or interpersonal stress. We examine also that corollary hypothesis that I mentioned to you, whether smokers benefit less from social support because they already use coping as an effective coping strategy. To our knowledge, this is the first time these issues have been examined among LGB individuals. So let me turn and tell you a little bit about our study. It is a sample of 156 self-identified gay, lesbian, and bisexual youth who were recruited from gay-focused community organizations or school programs in New York City. The youth are on average age 18 at the recruitment time period, about equally divided between males and females, representative of the ethnic racial background of adolescents in New York City. About two-thirds self-identified as lesbian or gay, the remainder essentially as bisexual. I indicated to you that this is a longitudinal study, and we had three assessment periods at recruitment, and then twice 6 months after that, at six-month intervals, two times after that. At each of the two follow-up time periods, we had excellent retention rates in excess of 90%. Moving on to measures and procedures and that sort of thing, I just want to make clear to you what we measured and when we measured things for this report. Stressful life events, negative social interactions, and family support were assessed at time one at recruitment. And by negative social interactions here, what we mean are relationships in which the youngsters are put down, the youngsters can be ignored by their social relationships. Symptoms of depression, anxiety, and number of conduct problems were assessed at time three. And in terms of our definition of smoking, our smokers were those youth who reported smoking throughout the study or who initiated smoking during the study. Non-smokers were those who reported not smoking at all or who quit smoking during the study and did not relapse. So the smoking is a dichotomy. Moving on to our findings. First of all, we found that smoking was not consistently associated with any of the indicators of psychological distress at time three, which was not worrisome. If in fact we have interactions or moderating relationships, we may find non-significant main effects. However, and contrary to the hypothesis in the broader smoking literature, smoking did not buffer the effects of negative stressful events on distress. There was just no relationship there. However, smoking was found to alter the relationship between social stress, that is interpersonal stress, and distress. But, and I want to underscore this, in the opposite direction than predicted by the coping hypothesis. In other words, the significant interactions that we found revealed that smoking exacerbated or amplified the negative impact of negative social relationships on both anxiety and conduct problems. And I know this sounds like a mouthful, so let me show you what those relationships actually look like. So focusing on anxiety here at time three, and we have the negative social interactions at time one, with those being low or high, what we find is that under conditions of high negative social interactions, it is the smokers who report the highest level of anxiety. This pattern was also found for conduct problems at time three, essentially an identical finding for the most part, with once again the smokers reporting the highest number of conduct problems under conditions of experiencing high social stress. With regard to the corollary hypothesis that smokers would be less likely to benefit from social support because they already have an effective coping strategy in their use of cigarettes, smoking was found to alter the relationship between social support and distress, but in the opposite way than predicted by the coping hypothesis, but in concert with the findings that I just showed you. In other words, significant interactions reveal that social support was beneficial for smokers and that smokers without social supports were most at risk for anxiety and conduct problems. And again, just let me show you those slides. Here we have anxious distress. And what we see is that when the youth report low levels of social support from families, this is emotional support, self-esteem support, informational support, all the things that youngsters might go to their families for. When they're experiencing low levels of that kind of support, it is the smokers who report the highest level of anxiety. I also want to point out here what's happening with the smokers under conditions of high family support. Notice that their anxiety level is identical to that of the non-smokers. With respect to conduct problems, again, we see a similar pattern to the one that I just presented. Under conditions of low family support, it is the smokers who are reporting the highest levels of conduct problems. When, in fact, support is high, the smokers do not differ from the non-smokers. So moving on to some conclusions. Despite the widespread suggestions that cigarette smoking serves to reduce stress and distress, the current study failed to find such a relation. In contrast, what we found was that LBG youth who cope with social stress through smoking were found to have the highest levels of anxious distress and conduct problems. This suggests one of two things. Either that smoking is an ineffective strategy for coping with stress, or that it may be temporarily effective in the short term, but maladaptive in the long term. A finding that, in fact, may exist for all drugs. They start off being helpful, and then they create their own problems, not to mention exacerbate the problems they were used to cope with. However, we did find that not all smokers were at risk for distress. Those LGB smokers who receive high levels of family social support were able to make use of that support to prevent distress. However, the smokers who lack family social support were at particular risk for anxious distress and conduct problems. The greater need for social support found among smokers further attests to the ineffective role of smoking as a coping strategy. Some implications. Our findings suggest that smoking has additional negative public health consequences beyond cancer and coronary heart disease risk. It may also adversely impact psychological distress among LGB youth. Remember that we had the distress at time three, the other indicators at time one. These findings also suggest the need to incorporate information on the ineffectiveness of smoking as a coping strategy into smoking prevention and cessation efforts. In addition, these findings suggest the importance of providing social support to LGB youth who smoke. I want to just quickly go through limitations, since this is APHA, where this is a must, or so it seems. Have a rather small sample size of 156 youth, although significant findings did emerge here in respect to many other findings that we've published. The study is also limited in that the sample is not representative of the population, and we freely admit that. However, previous findings from our sample have been replicated in representative samples of LGB youth. We definitely encourage replication of our findings for the purposes of generalizability and to confirm their theoretical and intervention implications. That's it. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to address them.
Yes.
They weren't odds ratios. They were not odds ratio. Oh, let me make that clear. Those were quantitative scales. So those are regression analysis, regular multiple linear regression analysis. Thank you for raising that. I didn't say that, and I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, good. All right. How we recruited the sample, we recruited from two major types of venues, although we had multiple representatives in each one of those kinds of venues. Gay-focused community-based organizations that had programs for LGB youth, and we went to those various programs, sort of like this, and talked to the youth and said, look, we're doing this study, we really would like your participation, cooperation, and we just need you to give us information, your name, your address, phone number, some way for us to contact you. through, and we did the same thing at two colleges in New York City, public colleges, from which we recruited youth there in the LGBT student groups. At each one of those, each one of our recruitment sites, we estimated that we got about 80% of the youth agreed to participate in the study. We told them why we were doing it and why we thought it was important, that kind of thing. The retention, how we managed to do that, we got very good information from the youngsters about how we could contact them, other people we could find them through. We also requested from them information about things we should be careful about or watch out for if we were to use a nickname. I mean, a lot of people don't use their formal name. They have some nickname or whatever. When would be good times to call them, et cetera? This was before the internet, really, so that wasn't a big issue. The other thing that we did was we would periodically call the youth just to say hi, and we always made available. We had a dedicated line for the youth that they could call whatever they wanted, about whatever they wanted to talk about. We did that for referral purposes and just to make them feel that they were part of the study and they were free to contact us, that it wasn't a one-way street. So that's how we managed to do it. We also, I must say, I had a very dedicated team of interviewers, and I made sure that I screened carefully for that and that we gave them a lot of training and follow-up with training and the like. So all of those things, I can't think of any one thing in particular, but the entire package worked, given the retention rates.
Okay. And the other question is about spuriousness.
Mm-hmm.
I know you looked at the relationship between smoking and anxiety under different conditions, but have you thought about testing for non-spuriousness and
yes.
other factors that may actually be explained?
Yes. Yes. In two ways. First of all, those multiple linear regressions that you saw controlled for a number of factors that were related to either any one of the independent variables, smoking by itself, or family support or social stress, as well as the outcomes. And those included things like we controlled for ethnicity, we controlled, I think it was for gender. There's a whole slew of them. And then the other thing was controlling for the issue of reactants. I mean, one of the things, we also had the anxiety, depression, and conduct problem measures at time one, and we just did the analysis again, because we're planning to write this up, where we controlled for that. And in fact, our results are practically identical to these. So we are sensitive to the issue of spuriousness, and we are trying to deal with that. And I'm sorry that I didn't make clear that those results were controlling for a variety of potential confounders.
Should we have another minute or two?
Did you
have one? Yes,
don't
please.
Go away.
Oh, okay, I'll try to stay here.
I found this a fascinating presentation, and I had a question. I just am curious about your thoughts about this, given that in Bangkok, we saw 17% across students, no matter what their sexual orientation was, 17% of them smoked. And I'm wondering if you have any comments about that. And I was specifically thinking, having recently moved to California, where there's a lot more limits on smoking. You know, what are your thoughts about peer influence or marketing or accessibility or cost as factors? Thank you.
You know, first of all, I really can't address the situation in Thailand. I don't really know anything about that. But I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
About what's happening with respect to tobacco, I mean, it is certainly still the case that the tobacco industry targets the LGBT community. I mean, that goes without saying, and there are a number of papers that have been written about that demonstrating that. And, you know, the tobacco industry is very good at presenting a good face to their product. So that goes on. We also have a community where smoking is rampant. So, in fact, there's a lot of modeling of the behavior that goes on as people enter the community. They see, you know, their peers, they see their elders smoking. So that also cannot be ignored. And then finally, you know, even in fact, it may be that youngsters do start smoking in part to cope with the distress and the stress that they're feeling. It's just that it's not effective. But they may not know that. I mean, I myself happen to be a former smoker, so I feel I can sort of speak to this with some authority. I mean, I remember I used to smoke when I used to get under stress. You know, was it, you know, exam times or whatever? So, you know, there's something about tobacco that is seductive that way. But what these data are indicating is that although even the youngsters may think that it serves that purpose, it really doesn't. And remember that one of the things that I cited was that, in fact, studies have been done where cigarette smokers do think that it helps them cope with whatever exigencies they're facing in their lives. It just doesn't seem to be the case, at least, you know, with this sample. And I really would urge anyone to go out and try to replicate this, because if, in fact, this is true for our community, I mean, that really has serious implications for what needs to be done and how we might be able potentially to go about doing things.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for that presentation, Dr. Rosario. Our next speaker, Leela Pollack, is going to be addressing the T part of LGBT. We often don't get to hear about